Just because you're into wellness and taking care of yourself doesn't mean that you're always right about everything. And as far as we are concerned and our guest today is concerned, it's time for us all to stop taking our opinions so seriously and let people be exactly who they are. And there is magic happening right now because you have landed on the Softpreneur podcast with Dawn Petrin and Elisa Jakim. We are here to help the wellness industry's most disruptive thought leaders express their essence louder and prouder in order to create more profitability and possibility. So now it's your turn.
Oh my goodness. I am so excited and honored to introduce this guest, the one and only Kelly Brogan, MD, who is a major business catalyst for Dawn and myself, and just such an incredible catalyst for change in our own lives. So have you ever wondered why these wellness girlies and holistic health gurus and fans are so darn judgy? Yeah, it's kind of weird, right? There's a lot of rigidity. So that's what we start diving into. Kelly's a New York Times bestselling author and pretty much a force of nature. She's amazing. And we're so grateful to get to speak to her on this topic. We dive into the shadow side of spirituality, wellness, holistic health, activism. Kelly goes really deep on how this shows up or showed up for her in her mothering and what she learned about sort of like resolving restriction and superiority in favor of relating. And also we peel back the curtain a little bit and talk about how Dawn and I supported on Kelly's amazing new book, The Reclaimed Woman, which we helped to midwife into existence. So we talk about that too. And yeah, it's really juicy. So if you are looking to step forward in sovereignty, self-reclamation, the reclamation of Eros and your life force, you probably already know Kelly's work. And if you don't, you are in for a serious treat. Can't wait for you to listen. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Softpreneur podcast. We are delighted and excited and in many ways beyond words, blissful to welcome our guest today, Kelly Brogan, Dr. Kelly Brogan, MD. She is a holistic psychiatrist, author of the new book, The Reclaimed Woman, and someone we have worked with in many lifetimes in many ways and fun business ways in this one. And we have received so much wisdom and really like new frameworks for thinking about womaning in this day and age through the wisdom that Kelly shares. And we always start out with this question, Kelly, so we'll drop you right in. But it's, do you have a spiritual practice? And is there anything you'd like to share with us about it?
So I love this question in this moment. First of all, hello, lovely ladies. This is so wonderful. And yeah, it's amazing. Just I can almost see all of the threads of the gorgeous quilt we have woven over these. It's like, I don't know, not even been that long. I feel like I've known you forever, which I guess is how it feels. Hashtag soul family. So I love this question now because I have been in pretty deep inquiry around what spiritual means to me. And it's one of those terms that has started to feel a bit bankrupt because of its extensive overuse, if there's such a thing as overuse, and how different a sentiment it carries depending on who's uttering it, right? So there absolutely was a time when I would mark my so-called spiritual awakening, probably back in, well, probably when I first birthed my daughter. So let's say 2009. And I've been on quite a journey sampling as a, you know, as a former atheist who went rogue into the new age, sampling so many different flavors of spiritual practices. And I go deep and fast when I take on something new. And I am very disciplined and very committed. And I seek some degree of mastery, you know, even if I never intend to teach it or be any sort of leader or guide in the realm. So I've tried on many, 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 many different spiritual practices. And at this point, I wonder if the whole concept of having a spiritual practice, being spiritual in my life, has sort of become divisive. and is really contributing to a sense of kind of superiority that limits my ability to connect and relate, right? So like, you know, if I were looking for a partner 5 years ago, I would have said, well, he has to have a spiritual practice. He has to be spiritual. He has to, you know, be aware of all these things. Maybe he has to have done plant medicine. I don't know. And today I can, it's almost like I can find the depth and value and meaning in the mundane, and I almost like I long for it, right? Like I long for the mundane that I sacrificed in pursuit of my own self-expression, in pursuit of my, you know, going for gold spirituality. There's like this ache inside for like, what about the simple family life of like doing the dishes? And what about that? You know, and is it really a meritocracy? Like, does it really get better the more spiritually attuned you are? I don't know. I'm asking all of these questions. So I would say, yes, I try on like any given morning, I might do a Kundalini, you know, breath of fire thing, or I might do a little Qigong I remember from what I learned from a teacher I had, or, you know, I might do a walking meditation, or I might put on a song and dance, or, you know, I might do a wide variety of things that I'm trying on. And none of them seem to have conferred the grounding in my selfhood that, and I can refer to it by name, that the practice entering through the upset, you know, that you helped me to pen has, right? So this idea of putting my feelings first and making them matter is literally an all day, every day reframe on my human existence. And probably that's why I joke like it's the only spiritual practice you need, because it's that much of a record scratch on the way that I've always lived, which is to find ways, including the Kundalini meditation, including these spiritual escapist routes, to find ways to not be with what I'm feeling. And for me to just go from little upset to big upset to medium upset in my life and say to myself over and over again, this matters enough to stop what I'm doing and not send the text and not try to fix it and not meddle in the external world just for like a minute or two, and to be with myself in that kind of devotion, you know, is that a spiritual practice? Is that just learning how to feel feelings? Is that just being an incarnate human? I don't know. But for me, that it remains like the greatest challenge and opportunity that I experience on a daily basis, probably.
I actually think that that's like I posted a meme about this recently, but it's like a sophisticated spiritual practice that also you're born with. And I think that might be like what spiritual practice is. And we've interviewed a lot of people who've done really similar things to you, who like went deep into it. And when we ask this question, they're like, yeah, the dishes. Like really, like you were like maybe the fourth or fifth person to say that. And we were interviewing Jai Chand, who's like a Kundalini singer and doesn't practice Kundalini anymore, just last week. And she said that like her spiritual practice these days is not seeking peak experiences, but actually like being in the mundane. And I don't know if you could recognize it as such without having first like sought these peak experiences. Some of us could, obviously, but like you or I or Elisa or Jai Chen, like we obviously needed that formalized connection to spirit in order to recognize, not that we didn't know it was everywhere, but in order to recognize that like actually it's available in us at all times and everything that we do. And like in the Vedic times and the prehistoric times, we were all connected to spirit all the time. So I actually think what you're speaking of is like a microcosm of the macrocosm of history, basically, of being separated from God and then coming back to God in every moment. And thank you for this nomenclature around entering through the upset. I use it all the time in my personal life and in our coaching. Like, it's just like, oh, okay, well, what is this telling you about you, right? And because we work with a lot of people who, you know, have read your books and are in your circle, it's really nice to be able to use this language, this shared language that you have actually created with people. We can go really deep, really fast. I call it speaking in Kelly Broganese.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it because I feel like whether entering through the upset is a spiritual practice, this way of looking at human behavior or our participation in this human experience, to me, of anything I've tried, has like radically helped me feel more at ease in relating to others. From in the book, in a lot of places, you speak about the victim triangle and seeing like, oh, am I going to, when I'm upset about something, like immediately react and enter through like all of my defenses and like entrained patterns, or like can I take a step back, and just like having really this tool set and arsenal to hold yourself through like relational experiences. For me, it's like it's radically shifted how I can be comfortable around other human beings. So is that spiritual practice? It feels like it, right? Because it, like, to me, actively makes life easier, whether it gets the label or not.
Totally. And it is a practice, I think, because by definition, if not practiced, it will not be accessed, right? So, you know, I had a string recently of annoying things happen in my life, right? And just like one after another, you know, sort of in my business realm, and then like two separate leaks in my house, and then my car wouldn't start. And it was just like all these things. And I, you know, I'm a single mom. And when anything happens related to the house or the car, sometimes by extension, interestingly, like technology stuff, like God forbid my printer doesn't fucking work, because you want to send me like literally, you know, to the loony bin. That's a surefire way. And I get this immediate exasperation. It's like the same pattern every time. And the feeling is like, why the fuck do I have to deal with this by myself? Like, where is the help? You know? And of course I do have help. I have friends who help me. I have professional men who help me. My dad helps me, you know, and the help does exist. But in the moment that these things occur, usually I'm on my own. And if I'm with my kids, then I am the adult who's in the room, right? So because I can like fly into fix it mode, I often will just immediately do that. Right. So like I will, you know, access that cool, calm, collected, you know, energy, and I'll just get down to the work of like solving the problem. But if I forget this practice, then I'll lose that opportunity to take literally 90 seconds and go in my bathroom by myself and feel that rage and beneath that despair of like the parentified child, right? Of the kid who was in charge of shit or felt in charge of organizing the household in a way that was inappropriate for her age. Okay. And, you know, I might continue to manifest and attract and moreover, like narrate in this way, these things, rather than getting to the place where it's just sort of something neutral that's happening and I'm not judging it as a problem and getting my kicks, you know, somatically off of like feeling that, you know, I hate this thrill of, you know, my unwanted experiences. So it really is, at least in my sort of rubric, the only way through, right? Because otherwise you're just festering, you know, in the repeat.
Yes. And it's like magical, right? Because it's like, we know that neuroplasticity is a thing now, but I like to think of it as like slides, like those neural pathways are like slides, and the ones we're used to are so much stronger. But I found doing these practices that I learned about through marketing for you. Like I learned so much marketing for you, but doing these practices has actually enabled me, I feel like, to change, but to become more myself than I ever was before, so much quicker. So I actually think this like entering through the upset is a hack towards, I don't want to say like ascension, because I don't mean like ascension, like, but towards coming home to myself and not projecting my BS on other people, right? It's like been really helpful. And it's, I think it's a fast track, really. And then you're saying like all these annoyances came up. They're probably really similar. So to me, and like that is like a chance for you to like, you know, tapas. So tapas, not small plates, but tapas as in like discipline, the ender through the upset through it. And then yay, different annoyances will come up next time, right? Coming to that neutral place is not easy. So when Elisa was like, it makes my life so much easier, I'm like, well, she doesn't mean in the moment. I'm pretty sure she doesn't mean in the moment. But over the longer term, it's like there's more of an ease, I'm going to say, in my brain from having done this practice and also like not getting like righteous.
A playfulness too, you know? It's, I got this email. Email is a very treacherous terrain for me because I realize how many of my examples involve unwanted emails. Anyway, I got this email a couple of months ago. I'm sure I told you about it. And it contained many unwanted sentiments from, you know, let's say a vendor that I contracted with and, you know, sort of blaming me for things that didn't go the way they were supposed to go and not taking any responsibility, like this kind of triggering material. And I, within like, I don't know, 30 seconds, had accessed my Rolodex of my ledger of grievances that I've been collecting the entire time we've been working together. And I penned it right in the way that only I know how. And I created like a litigation worthy treatise that I was ready to click send on. Right. And it was full of defensive, I'm right about how wronged I am energy. And you know, the alternative path, which again, only becomes visible in these moments through practice and repeated exposure to the opportunity, is playful, right? It's like, this I can do in my fucking sleep. Like I came in with this kind of warrior energy. It requires literally zero effort. And the progression, you know, my North Node in Libra is to access something different that is more complementary, but moreover is more potentially fulfilling for me. So the playful version of Kelly doesn't send that email.
Right.
Right. She guards her energy to the extent that she's not going to give it to this guy that she fundamentally feels rejecting of. She's not going to donate it there. It matters too much. So she's just going to move on and literally like not acknowledge it. And I am never somebody who leaves unread anything. So expanding my capacity to not do the thing is where the nervous system reprogramming comes in. And it's also the path into a different kind of relationship to my own energetic resources, you know?
Yeah. And it's magic. Like, I really think it is magic. I mean, it's effort, but it's magic. And I'm like one who really wants magic to exist and knows that like, even like, you know, science is so far along that it's magic at this point, right? Like the fact that you're in Miami and I'm in the Kootenays and Elisa's in Delaware and we can have this like deep connection, that's magic too. But this practice, and like you let yourself write it out loud, and then it's like, oh yeah, right. I'm not doing this anymore. There wasn't that pause before, right? You would have just sent the email. And so it's like that to me is, I think, the magic that so many of us are seeking, and it elevates our connection with other humans because you leave that guy like, you know, you left him on red or whatever, but now he has to deal with it. Instead of you dealing with it and you guys like getting off on it, basically like back and forth. So yeah, I love it. And I think it like really actually dovetails into something we wanted to discuss with you on the pod. And Elisa, you jump in if I get it wrong, or if I get it right out, you know, you jump in. But is this idea that maybe the wellness industry, as it becomes more sophisticated, is starting to soften away from this like righteousness, like this is the path to wellness, just like this is the path to God, and that we are part of that softening in that? And I know like it's interesting because we are doing a brand strategy for someone right now, and they've come out to be like the warrior. And I was thinking about it and I was like, you know, I feel like 10 years ago, Kelly would have come out as the warrior as well. But then when we did it for you, we had like the sage and the lover, right? I think the sage is like throughout, you know, throughout that's like your whole life, you've probably had sage energy. But I feel like your warriorness has softened as you've like tried all these practices and done all these different things. So yeah, we wanted to talk about, and then coming back into the Kelly Brogan lexicon, like not wronging other people and practices on their path, right? Yeah. Do you have anything you want to like start off to say about?
Oh my gosh. So much to say about this. And yeah, actually, especially in the realm of mothering, you know, because if there are mothers listening, I think there's a bunch of things in my life that I wish I had heard one time, right? Or like met one woman who just kind of like put it out there, because I've had so many experiences like that where I find the right woman in the right moment who says the right thing. And I'm just jailbroken from an assumption, a rigid perspective. And it wouldn't have happened, right? Like when I had my first daughter, I had a natural birth, but I didn't know a woman who'd had a home birth, literally. Okay. I was still in the conventional world. And if I had just known one, just one, that permission field, I think could have expanded out for me. So this whole category, especially in the mothering realm, it stimulates that desire, you know, to maybe whisper some of these sentiments into the ears of women who would otherwise have, you know, walked a more contracted path, because there's just so much humbling material in here for me about the shadow of my holistic health pursuits, of my activism, and of my sort of striving to extract from life validation for my own beliefs and perspectives, right? So it's this very, you know, it's a masculine comportment towards reality where I am like proving all the time the evidence that I'm right. So in this world, you need the person who, you know, takes the pharmaceutical to suffer consequences, just to give you a little window into the shadow of this, right? Like you can't compute when the C-section baby is like thriving and who is fed formula is thriving and healthy. There is this very sort of rigid framework that needs to be adhered to. And it ultimately is a good, bad split. It ultimately is sort of the virtue based structure that we were all raised on that fucked all of us up, you know, and allowed us access only to conditional love. It's just a greenwashed, you know, version of the experience from my perspective. So as I began to research all of these, you know, right ways to take care of yourself as a human, right? Like, what do you eat? What time do you go to bed? What are the horrible things that drive illness in the material physical realm? I came to believe that there are linear relationships between exposure to toxicants, poisons, and health problems, right? But then there were nuances introduced, right? So I started to learn about things like German New Medicine that suggests that actually it has nothing to do with an objective contamination phenomenon. And it has everything to do with how you're narrating and perceiving the experience and how you are in a state of conflict and maybe even shock. And once you address that, the symptoms will no longer be necessary because they are a biological adaptation to what's going on. And they're serving you in this dangerous moment in your life. Okay, well, that's confusing, because is it the fluoride or is it, you know, the shitty conversation I had, you know, with my mom or whatever. And then you start to meet these outliers, right? Like people who do have these conflicts, are exposed, don't have illness. And you just start to enter into the impossible to circumscribe complexity of human health and how it invokes like everything from the lifestyle dimension of like, you know, what I call chopping wood, carrying water, all the way to the existential, like, did I contract for this in the interlife, you know, kind of thing. And the desire to get it right and figure it out, it's almost like, at least for me, I was at a certain point forced into submission, to where now I mostly believe that it's written, you know, and there's actually not much I have to do at all. You know, eat the McDonald's, don't eat the McDonald's. And however I can get to this place of offering my attention to myself, body, mind, and soul, so that I actually take my seat as the main character in this movie that perhaps is already written and I'm just here to watch. However I can do that, I will access like a new kinds of experiences. So it's literally not about better or worse. And that's where I came upon this perspective that if we could, which you both know, as women, relax and hold the sense that we must express our perspective on what's going on to whomever is in front of us when we're not asked, right? So when we imagine that we know better, that shadow realm is very active that says, I'm going to get you to see. And it makes sense because it's part of how we manipulate safety out of the unsafety that is all around us. And I have found over and over and over again that if I remember and remind myself that I actually don't know better, right, than anybody else, what they're supposed to be doing in their life. If they ask me, right, that's, you know, potentially a different thing. But for the most part, even then, as you were suggesting, like the task is to help them remember, you know, like what it is that I'm in a position to facilitate their recollection of. And I have not encountered a more humbling arena, you know, with regard to this than, like I said, in my own mothering, because like so many holistic mamas, right? And here I am, like I've written books on the subject. I have hundreds of references to prove that I'm right. I raised my children with very rigid rules around nutrition. So I didn't have, I'm not like a rule kind of gal and definitely not a helicopter parent I was to the opposite extreme, probably absent secondary to my workaholism. However, I had very rigid rules around food, right? So like, you know, they went to birthday parties. They never one time ever had pizza or cake, literally never one time ever. No exceptions, no nothing. And, you know, I would like get them the like healthy, organic, gluten, dairy free version of the snack. And, you know, we had our house hardwired way before that was even like a thing. And I was always, you know, thinking about how to optimize health and safety through conscious consumerism and how to mitigate. I mean, interestingly, I used to I never wore a mask during the whole pandemic. However, I used to wear a mask to mitigate jet fuel recirculation on the plane. And I would offer this to my daughters, like back in the day. So like there was some even weird things that I did in the name of health. And it's interesting because almost every, in my generation, like almost every like holistic mama I know has kids with like really fucked up teeth. No, for real. Like cavities, abscesses, weird, right? Like my kids have never been to a doctor, like literally. And they've never been to an emergency room, nothing. However, they're, and I'm gonna like expose unsavory details of their dental history, but like it's been an issue, right? And that is, I could literally name 15, 20 like families who have experienced the same thing. And so I was like, is it that we're not using fluoride? Is it that, you know, they were breastfed 15 months instead of 5 years? Is it that we don't have dairy? You know, like what is it? What is, and teeth are so mysterious and like what even is happening? And when I learned about German New Medicine related explanations of like what it is to not feel you can take a bite out of your life, right? To feel disempowered and to lack autonomy in the realm of one's own nourishment, right? The way that we manipulate and coerce kids around their food is twisted. Okay. It's actually twisted. And it's so normative that unless you think about this, you wouldn't see it, right? To not allow a child to decide like whether or not he or she wants to eat the thing and then how much, right? And then to generate this taboo around the things that they can't have that all the other kids are having and that are probably delicious. Like it's a minefield of psychic conflict. And it also exposes the controlling nature of these, you know, with the best of intentions, holistic rules that so many of us apply to our children. And you know what? How do we know we're right? How do we know we're right. And science is not a sufficient explanation, because as somebody who has sat on both sides of the scientific, you know, argument aisle, you can truly access any. And it's a process, right? It's not a destination. Science is never a destination. So I started to experience like the humbling of my righteousness in my children's, on their behalf, let's say. When my daughter, my youngest, said to me one day, she's like, "Mama, you're afraid of so many things." And meanwhile, I'm like thinking, I'm like Joan of fucking Arc over here, you know, like fighting the good fight for all the mothers. And my daughter in her animal brain is feeling my fear, right? Of the chemtrails and the 5G and like the pesticides and the hidden GMOs and the, you know, the cell phone and just the endless list of all of the ways that I had been reinforcing to her, you know what, you're fragile and you should be scared and vigilant. That is the subtext to all of this, right? Because now I don't worry about any of that shit. Like I literally don't. I am at a stage where I eat literally whatever I want. I don't think for 1 minute about EMF or any of it. And I'm not saying that this is like what I recommend. It's an arc, right? It's a process. It's a journey. But I've arrived, at least for now, in this place where I feel more powerful, right? And I also know that my resources within are what I'll always need to access to unlock that sense of resiliency and maybe even, you know, some kind of invincibility on some level, or at least, you know, the resolution of fear that something outside is bigger than me. No, I am by nature bigger than any of what the hell is going on in my own lifescape. I'm the one who made it up. So how about I just make it up how I want it to be, you know? And so it's probably been about 2 or so years, 3 years, where my daughters, they do what they want, you know? And the only place I still struggle is around, you know, kind of tech, I would say, and, you know, helping them to cultivate some kind of discipline around that. Okay. Let's drop that there. That's a whole big subject. But regardless, like they eat what they want, they buy with the makeup they want, they do what they want. And the radical shift in our relationship was gatekept by my own unwillingness to feel the shame that I had done it wrong, that I had failed, and that maybe I insisted that I was right all these years and I wasn't right all these years. So if I eat the croissant in Paris in front of them, that must mean that the gluten was never an issue. And why did I force it on them? Right. So to allow myself to be both the one who insisted on gluten free for 15 years and the one who eats the croissant requires that I don't actually source my identity from that edict, right? And I had to mature, you know, and integrate to be able to hold that moment and honestly laugh about it and not feel like they were going to throw it back in my face and judge me for it and not feel like it reflected poorly on me and my efforts or made me fundamentally wrong. And as I did that, you know, our intimacy and connection has flourished. I mean, it's what was always required was that I actually see them in front of me, especially they're teenagers, right? So especially at this phase, and allow them to be who they are without feeling that they are responsible for managing my own comfort in this world by behaviorally, you know, adopting my belief system about what is bad, wrong, and scary. So the consequences of this in the mothering realm are legion. And I'm grateful, you know, that I softened in this way before they were out of the house, because, you know, I have a girlfriend whose kids are already out of the house, and we've kind of been on the softening journey together. And, you know, she didn't have the opportunity to have this sort of rebrand of herself while they were under her roof. And so I feel very grateful, you know, and you could be listening to this and have, you know, an 8-year-old and have even more time to relax into a different relationship, right? Because the last thing I'll say is like, it's like I could inspire, like I was talking to my daughter about childbirth the other day, and I could, because none of her friends were like, were born from like a natural birth or a home birth. And I could inspire her to have a home birth, which I remain very passionate about. I could inspire her around that by scaring her about all of the medical interventions and scaring her about the things that she would sacrifice and lose by going to a hospital. Or I could talk about how it was, you know, the defining experience of divinity, like in my entire life. And I just want this for every woman, you know, whatever, like, right. You can inspire or you can coerce. And that shift, I think, has helped me to see like how I talk about food and self-care and all the things that I do, not because they're the healthy, right thing to do, because I actually like sardines. I like how they taste. Not because they have special omegas and I made sure they didn't have the mercury or whatever, you know, for example. It's a weird example, but yeah. So that's a long answer to your amazing inquiry.
Thank you so much. I love this. It really confirms. I think a part of me called BS on the like eating healthy thing in college, because I like end of high school, beginning of college, had like some compulsive dieting. Like I had an eating disorder. And there was a period where I was eating mostly like carrots and vegetables, and I gained a ton of weight. It was no explanation. I was an outlier, and I was like, and it was like, I couldn't digest my life. I was fully bloated and I was like, felt heavy. Like I was carrying around a heaviness, right? And it was evidenced. And it's so funny because now in my life, I'm the least rigid I've ever been about eating. And I'm like the weight fell off somewhere, you know, or fell off through being a mother. But it's just funny, these sort of like the, I guess, psychosomatic journey of this, like, how are we digesting life? Where are we receiving nourishment? Where is rigidity? And in the wellness industry, I think there's the superiority piece, which you mentioned, Kelly, right? Like, if I don't eat gluten, dairy, sugar, have alcohol, do this, then I am okay, like, as a human being. And I might even be better than other humans. And like, and then at the same token, it's so there's something like heartfelt in the holistic mama who wants to like give her children like something she didn't have, like a longer time breastfeeding or something like that. And we kind of like, yeah, I'm curious about how you find in that parenting space, like this sort of like, there's blessings to the way you went about it. There's like gifts that your daughters got from the experience, I'm sure, as well as like inquiry for you about like, oh, I don't need to force or like move with fear as I navigate the world.
Yeah. So if I think about like, you know, knowing what I know now, like how would I do it differently? You know, until my kids can get up and open the fridge themselves and make themselves a snack or a lunch, I probably would do it how I did it, right? So I probably would guard their nutrition. Would I ever say, finish this, try this, eat now, we're eating dinner now? No, I would not. I would offer it, eat it, don't eat it. And, you know, you're in charge of your body. And I think a nuance is that I do believe that there is a relationship to discipline that we are want to develop, right? Like that it really serves us to explore over a lifetime. And the shadow, obviously, of discipline is that self-flagellating tyrant, right? So, but the, you know, the light side of it is, you know, as Marianne Woodman talks about, it's the gaze of the teacher who loves you, right? It's this safe container for your desires. And, you know, as somebody who has a health related protocol, you both know well, Vital Mind Reset, that is a very dogmatic, like go big or go home. You cheat on the prescribed diet on day, you know, 17, you're starting at day one again, right? So it's that kind of jam. And I have watched this program work seeming miracles. And I do believe that part of how and why it does is because it confers to the system a sense that somebody's actually home, right? Like somebody's home who gives a shit. And so it's a fine balance between this sense of protectorship. Is that a word? Protectorship and guardianship and guidance and micromanagement, coercion, and the fear-based rigidity that gives us a little sense like we, you know, have a foothold in what the hell is going on in our lives. So threading that needle is obviously going to be totally personal. And I knew, like, it was very clear to me as a mother, the day that each of my daughters showed up and somebody was home, like in terms of their agency and sovereignty and authority. And with my eldest, it was 13, and with my youngest, it was around 10. And I knew, right? Here's the fork in the road. I can either insist that I'm right and attempt to power over her and compromise our connection, maybe forever, or I can stay on her team and listen and be real about what's coming up for me, and we'll navigate it together, right? So whether that's like sleepovers or boyfriend stuff or iPhone requests. And I knew when I was there, right? So I knew that, you know, I value this opportunity for intimacy in my life so, it makes me no cry, so deeply, like that I just feel so fucking grateful that I didn't, you know, I didn't take the bait of my own fear in that moment. And because I didn't, it was so much easier ever since. Like it's been obvious every time. And sometimes I still, you know, will do the thing where I'm like, you know, I don't know what, get irritated or whatever. And then I'll circle back and say, oh, okay, here's an example. My eldest has her permit, right? She's learning how to drive. So I often teach, based on Laura Doyle's work, that, you know, one of the diagnostic symptoms of your wifing relative to your husband, right? Your wifing in a way that is probably not going to get you what you want out of that man is if you micromanage his driving, right? So he's driving and you're like, oh, why are you going so slow or fast? Or you should turn there. Are you sure you know where you're, like that kind of, you know, passenger seat driving. And so while she's driving, I am doing that times like 12 million. I mean, I'm literally like, there's a branch. Like what? Wait. I'm like grabbing her arm. I'm like making it definitely more dangerous for her to drive, like through my reactivity. And it feels like I can't help it, but that's like not entirely actually accurate. And she's a good driver. And by the way, she's doing the best she fucking can. Like what, you know? So, but I'm conveying this sentiment, like you're doing something wrong, you know, and this is urgent. And so, you know, maybe after like 10 rides, I said, you know what? I feel like your dad is probably like going to be way better at this than me. And like, maybe it's not a mom's like job in a way. And I also can do like a way better job regulating myself. So I apologize, you know, and I'm going to do a better job because I can. Okay. Regulating yourself isn't just like when it's easy and convenient, you know, in your bathroom. Like it's about these moments where I can access, first of all, trust and faith in God, you know, and whatever is meant to unfold will unfold. And I also can do all the things, feel my butt in the seat, my spine, you know, making contact with the back of my seat, and I can breathe and I can open my perspective and allow my gaze to rest in the back of my head. I can do all these things to just come into better regulation so that I'm actually there to support her on her team, right? So it's not like I don't like mess up. I do. And I just remind myself all the time, like, how can I stay aligned, you know, with this human in front of me so that I have this opportunity of a lifetime to access like true intimacy that honestly has not been available, like, in my previous partnerships. And I don't even know if it's like necessarily available through other means the way it is in a mother child. And of course that means also with your own mother, right? A mother child dyad. It's a very unique portal.
I'm so glad that this mothering is the example that we're working with, because I think in the birth space, women judge themselves so harshly. And I want to say like this, you know, you have an MD in psychiatry, which meant that like that conferring of safety meant a lot to you and you wanted to pass it on to other people. And then I have noticed this because, you know, we hang out with a lot of people who are like not in love with the conventional medical system, but a lot of them are like doctors who, when they learned they had been lied to, they went all the way on the other side, yeah. Right? And so I think that, I know you're on TikTok too, right? There's like this crunchy mom I get and she's hilarious. I forget her name, but anyway, and she really showcases that like crunchy mom, granola mom, I say like caricature. And it reminds, and I'm glad you brought up Vital Mind Reset too, because I actually think that swing in the other direction enables you to make more informed choices about like, yeah, you know, maybe gluten's okay for my kids, but we're not going to give them like, you know, Fun Dip when they're 3 years old, like sort of thing. Right. But I do know that as people, as humanity, we just seem to pendulum swing and then we hopefully come back to that middle path. So coming back to birth, I think, you know, we know that birth was co-opted by men, but I'm not wronging men, but by the medical, conventional medical system in order to like turn it into a capitalist affair. And then there's like that swing to that like free birth thing. And that's beautiful. And, we had Ayla on and we spoke to her about like what sovereignty is and like, we love like Ayla's. It's like a middle path. It's like learn and then make the decision for yourself. So be sovereign as you birth in the hospital or be sovereign as you birth in the home, but make that choice. And the reason I love birth so much as the example or child rearing and birth is because so many women want to have a free birth. And then actually, oh, it turns out that the conventional medical system and science has a lot that it can give to women in these times when shit goes wrong. And if you can like make a sovereign choice to go to the hospital and get the support that you decide you want because it creates a safer to you birthing experience and then not judge the shit out of yourself for it afterwards. Cause I don't think it's like where you birth that's the problem. It's like how you then project on your experience. Like, oh no, I'm wrong because I was scared and I went to the doctor, which doesn't mean you have to go to the doctor if you're scared. Like my friend was giving birth out in the middle of the woods and, you know, went to the doctor because she was hemorrhaging afterwards. So she ended up in the hospital. And then like it was her midwife who was with her the whole time who actually did the thing that stopped the hemorrhaging. And she was able to have a blood transfusion. Some people might be really against that. And for her, like the ability to do that meant that like she survived that birth, which she might not have in the past. And I don't,
yeah. So
who knows? But for her, so I'm not saying that it was right or wrong in either way, but for her not to be like, oh shit, I did it wrong. That's where I think where like grace comes in, right? Where, and I can say like, you know, I have a friend who's, you know, a friend who's quite crunchy and lovely and also who has like a dear friend, family member who is like the opposite of that. And like, she's not going to get to hang out with that baby if she's judgy and mean about what the mother's choices were during that situation. And this is where I think like this like schism happens in the wellness industry where we're like, you know, well, unless you're on the VMR diet, you aren't worthy of hell, right? And I know you're not saying that, but or unless you're a vegan or unless you're a carnivore, oh, I can't believe you're eating seed oils. Like butter and perineum sunning is the only way into wellness, right? And it feels like what that's doing is just dividing beautiful humans who want to create wellness and love in the world from other beautiful humans who want to create wellness and love in the world, right? And this is where I think this like wronging is not serving, even if you know, like, well, actually canola oil is not good for you, you know, but then I'm like, well, you know, judging my brother for taking his kids to McDonald's when I've never seen a more beautiful father than my brother with his children. You know what I mean? It's like, fuck it. They should be able to have McDonald's if they want to. I'm not going to be like, here's everything that's wrong with that. Right? Yeah. So I just want to say thank you for bringing that one up because I think our children are so precious that we want to keep them safe. Right? And we get judgy around it. And it's the judgingness I like discernment, but like the judginess that takes us out of love and then maybe takes us out of spirit.
Yeah. And it also robs you of the opportunity to understand the yes that might live underneath, right? So, you know, if I need to make something bad and wrong in order to choose what it is that I'm choosing, the energy is really focused on the bad and wrong thing I'm not doing. And there's not a lot of energy focused on why I love and am inspired by the thing that I am doing. And when you're in that vigilant grid of what all is dangerous, deleterious, harmful, injurious to the human body that has only ever demonstrated its infinite resiliency. Okay. But when you're in that grid, you really are in the fixing energy. You're not in the creating energy. You're not in the place where you don't eat the, you know, the seed oil thing because it tastes like shit actually. And it doesn't feel good. You know, it's funny because I had one of my, I think we wrote about this in the book. I don't remember, but I had one of these softening moments when I found these Entenmann's donuts. So, you know, I was born in the '70s and, you know, I'm just like, was the junk food queen, and Entenmann's like chocolate covered donuts were, I would probably eat like a whole box every few days. And I was packing my old house and my daughters weren't home and I was in my daughter's room and in a napkin were these two Entenmann's donuts. And I decided I hadn't had gluten in 15 or dairy in 15 years. Like literally, I've traveled all over the world. No problem. I find a way always prepared my little, you know, organic snack, whatever. And I took that as a very deep invitation to explore this taboo, this fetish, because like I would look at, like if I saw an Entenmann's donuts box, I mean, I would feel this like, oh my God, they were so good, you know, but I cannot, you know, kind of an energy. And I ate them and they were delicious. And at the end, there was like this waxy film, like in my whole mouth that was so gross that if it was sitting here and it was consequence free, I wouldn't eat it again, you know? And actually it was in my daughter's room because she said somebody gave it to her and it's gross. She didn't fucking eat it. So like, that's why it was on the floor, you know, because she somehow has a more inbuilt, you know, sensitivity to, you know, these non-food foods than I apparently grew up with. And, you know, there's a way to experientially create your rules. And that's what I've sort of concluded is like the mature masculine. Like if you think about this, like trustworthy man by your side kind of a thing, you want him constantly assessing, reassessing, attuned to the environment and making these micro decisions about what the moment is calling for in terms of action, right? You don't want him consulting a rule book to guide you. That feels totally unsafe at a certain point. Right. But there is a point at which that guy who's actually consulting the rule book feels safer than the guy who's like, you know, breaking the bottles and, you know, throwing the axes and raping the women and whatever. Like there is a maturation of this experience of, you know, this masculine energy within, as I like to think about it. And there's value all along the path. Right. So it's not the case that this is a better place to be. And I think that's also the trap. It's like the meta trap is to suggest that it is a better thing to not think things are better than other things. Right. So it's like, I don't know. For me, this is where I am right now. This is what I'm exploring. And I am confronting all of these ways that my identity feels challenged by, you know, even saying this out loud, you know, this kind of material, whereas I could just stick by my, you know, 2013 perspective on things and maybe have an easier life. I don't know. So yeah, it's just resolving the meritocracy of the human experience.
Okay. But so I want to bring it back to Vital Mind Reset in terms of this, and I'll be quick, which is that I don't think we can have that maturation if we've never experienced that discipline, right? So it's like the spirituality that you were talking about at the beginning, now it can be in every moment because I've had the experience of the discipline. And maybe not every person needs Vital Mind Reset, or say the GAPS diet, you know, like VMR is different than that because you also have like meditations and like go outside. It's not just like get rid of everything and see what makes you feel better. But I think for a lot of people, like doing the strict vital mind reset diet allows them to feel what it feels like in their body to not have a bunch of shit in it. And then they can make those decisions. So you just said about your daughter, like, I don't know where she gets that from. Yes, probably because she was raised on really fucking healthy food. And so now she can make a mature decision. Like, yeah, those donuts are gross. You didn't have that growing up, right? Because you were like eating whatever we ate in the 80s. And so it's like a different, I think this is why it's like, why there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with going hardcore conventional. There's nothing wrong with going hardcore crunchy. The only wrong is being righteous about it and not being open to like new experiences, right? Because yeah, without having, for a lot of the people that we've spoken to who did VMR, without it, they would have just been on that like shitty North American commercialized diet that was making them feel crappy, right? And so if you cut those out, then you can know how you actually feel when you eat them.
Totally. And I remain a zealot about that 1 month of your entire adult life where you self-experiment in this way. And, you know, also, by the way, you get to enter into this field of thousands of people before you who've had really wild outcomes that are totally nonlinear. Okay. So I'm very passionate about this. And I think of it more as a ritual and, you know, relative to just like, let's say doing the GAPS diet or a SIBO diet or a raw diet or a carnivore diet or whatever, where it's almost impossible to come at this self-experimentation ticket for me from an energy other than, you know, this top-down self-aggression, right? This like, especially if you're symptomatic, this like, I will fix this now, you know? So discipline, like we said, it can come from that place. And that's what I think is, a bit unique about VMR is the different twist on it, right? Like it's more about like, I'm here now, but I'm really fucking here, right? And so when you stick to, you know, this outline, to me, it invokes almost like if you had, let's say an elder, right? And the elder said, you're going to go out into the woods on a vision quest for 4 days. I'm not coming with you. You got this. And you're going to walk 16 steps in this direction, you know, 20 in that. And then you're going to slide down the waterfall and then you're going to find a clearing. You're not like, oh, well, I feel like walking 10 steps and I'm going to go 14 over here. You don't interpret it. You do the damn thing exactly as it was told to you. And then you're on your own. And you're invoking the gaze of his trust in you and this lineage of, you know, confronting the existential terror of death and moving through the illusion of it, right? That's what's happening there. And I'm not trying to say, you know, this is the equivalent, but on some level, it's the only way I can actually explain the outcomes that we see is because it appears to be this initiatory invocation of a very similar adultifying actualization. And I have always held this energy of do it exactly, you know, the way I say it. And I'm not answering any questions. Right? Like when I did the protocol in my practice, I would have an appointment at the beginning, an appointment at the end, and you don't get the next appointment unless you've done it. And I am not available to tell you how many almonds to eat, right? Like you have sufficient instructions, but they're not all the instructions. So there's this blend of like, you know, regarding authority with respect in a way, right? Because remember, they were paying me as the MD, and also invoking your own self-trust and guidance. And I think those are the same ingredients as any good initiatory process, you know, that moves us from adolescence to adulthood. And because we don't have that in the, you know, hegemony of American culture the world over, we're in this arrested development. And it just means we don't necessarily get to experience other perspectives, right? Because we don't look at maturation as like baby bad, adult good, right? Like it's not like that. It's perspectives. You develop different perspectives and you get to try them on and then you die, you know? So how do you revitalize, like frame shift your perspective? I don't know. It seems to require some sort of ritual. And the ritual, if it's done from this proving, I'm going to prove it energy, or I'm going to punish myself energy, or like those are just different flavors than a true initiation, which is like, I'm here, I'm ready, let's go.
It's the journey of the book to the reclaimed woman that we sketched out. And Kelly, often you do talks and organize material around that rupture of empathy as the beginning of this hero heroine's journey, this idea of like, oh, that moment of maybe an F no to the mainstream system, or the thing we're like pendulum swinging against, feels invaluable, right? Because it is like the first attempt to be like, no, I'm going to self-husband this one. I'm going to take my kind of like strong masculine and my maybe like, you know, dark feminine energy and be like, F no, I'm finding my own way, because like what has been presented to me is unacceptable. So I also wanted to invite anyone who's listening that the book gives this journey and ritual in a different way. Can you speak a little bit about like, so what is the reclaimed woman? What's the reclamation path? And I feel like this whole conversation, it's like dovetailing this like, okay, the pendulum swing and back, and I've got a baby, life is happening. I won't wrong myself.
There's no, please don't.
But I might mute myself.
You'll meet the part of you that thinks you're doing something very wrong in this moment. Yeah. I mean, I understand this concept of reclamation to be the resolution of the triangulation against the self, right? So where you actually get on your own team and you stay on your own team, which in the health reclamation space, it means that your symptoms are never a problem. Literally, your insomnia every night of the week for 3 hours, it's not a problem. There's actually no problem here. And that, you know, what starts with a neutrality and a tolerance grows into a curiosity and an embrace, and maybe even a devotional love to the life that you are, you know, experiencing, however the fuck it looks. Okay. And in the spaces of our relational experiences, so as mother, as entrepreneur, as wife, in the experience of our own sexuality and how it ebbs and flows and, you know, morphs and weaves throughout our experience in different phases of our lives as women, the same phenomena manifest, right? So it's still opportunity after opportunity to stay on your own team. It's just that in this case, it's not about your headache and your diarrhea, or, you know, your panic attacks. It's about how you say no when you feel a little no, and how you honor your little yes, even when it makes absolutely no sense to do so. And you get coherent around your priorities. And for me, when I do a midlife review and I look at my regrets, let's say, or what feel like mistakes or what feel like things I would do differently, they almost always have this structural issue. I don't know how else to put it, right? Where I had priorities. Okay. I was clear, and a part of me made sure I knew this, that my relationships, for example, were actually my priority. But then my behavior demonstrated something different, right? My behavior demonstrated that my career was my priority over all of my relationships with my kids, with my husband, maybe even with my friends. And that mismatch, that incoherence is, you know, it is the battleground. It's where and how life can start to feel like an unwinnable war. And when you get in the practice of listening to your different parts, even when they say things you don't want to hear, even when they invite you to consider possibilities that you, you know, want to just dismiss, you get to rest back into the arbiter, right? Like you rest back into this witness, this observer, you know, this kind of sacred parent in the room who's listening to all the kids and is going to act when the wise impulse to do so is clear and not a second beforehand. And definitely isn't going to collude with one over the other and just be like, oh, suck it up, it's fine, you know, to the one who's not getting her way. And the process of resolving resentments and disappointment and guilt, and all of these seeming like unwanted feelings has allowed me at least to reclaim the bits of myself that I left along the side of the road in this process of self-betrayal and self-rejection. And it's all maybe even designed this way, right? So again, it's like, are there really any mistakes? Is that even possible? Or is it just exactly how the fuck it's supposed to be? And I have an opportunity through every little upset to meet a part of myself that I wouldn't be meeting if I was busy being right and insisting that I've cracked the code of being a powerful woman, right? So instead, I think the humility that I've gained, and probably have a lot more still to access, but the humility that I've gained has always led me to this place of, I don't know really much of anything other than the little sensations inside, right? These little taps that I get, and sometimes the big torrents, that swirl on top of those little taps. And the little taps are pretty binary, right? It's like, nope, or yep, that's for you. Nope, that's not for you. And learning to prioritize that and listen to that has allowed me to feel less alone and more like I actually belong here. It's a weird positive consequence, I guess, of that seemingly unrelated practice. But I do think that that's why it's described to me by so many of the women that I work with and we work with, that they feel like they've come home to themselves, right? It's like you arrive in a way in your own skin when you devote your attention to this body with presence and curiosity.
Oh, Kelly Brogan, I just love you so much. You were just so brilliant. And my life has been just like elevated and changed so much in our friendship and having, I'm going to cry a little, like having these practices and these explorations and like doing work with you over, because I think we've been like working together and we worked together really intimately for a while for like three, almost 4 years now or something. Yeah, 3 years now. Whoa, 3 years, like actually.
What a 3 year period to drop in.
The day actually is when we had a kickoff call for our first work together 3 years ago. And my ability to hold myself through the exploration and also our relationship has shifted so incredibly. And I've been so inspired by the multitudes of humans or beautiful humans, as you put it, who have also learned how to hold themselves. And I think they're really, even in the last, say, year and a half, I think there really has been a massive maturation in you in the way that you're approaching life, in that softening. And it's just continually inspiring. So thank you so, so much for all of this. I just really like, I don't know if I know myself as the same person as I was before we met. I just want to say thank you for that. Yeah.
Oh, I adore you. I adore you both. And, one of the hallmark signs of God in my life is that I have a preternatural ability to call in extraordinary women. And I rely on that, and you both are like such examples of that for so many reasons. But as everybody listening knows, like not the least of those reasons is like the extraordinary heart, that you both have. So I love you.
Yeah.
We love you. And like what I said earlier, this like things becoming easier, I feel like, and I've said it before, now I'm going to cry. Oh my God, it's a cry fest. But like, I really think I was so approaching life from this like disempowered victim before we met. And it's also amazing because I think, Kelly, you and I first talked when I was like overdue with my son, like a week past the due date waiting, and you entering my life, and both of you really like in such a strong way when I like stepped over the threshold, that big rite of passage into motherhood. And it's almost my son's birthday, like tomorrow.
Amazing.
I was literally laboring right now. The 4-day labor journey, which we'll talk about another time. But wow, like I too, like Dawn said, I feel changed. Like I feel changed, but that I'm more me, right? And that is like, yeah, that's the inspiration and the depth of this work and the medicine that you carry. And it's so funny. The last thing I'll say is I remember when we were talking about the book and what this was going to be about. And we talked about how, you know, in the birth of in that 2013 space, we were all trying to exit our bodies. And we were doing this like love light, rose petals, goddesses, like I'm ascending. And we are like, yes, I think humanity is like doing some cool stuff right now. And now I think also, Kelly, like your work too has really brought us into exploring shadow and exploring the other parts of ourselves, like the entire, like, and like this whole industry. I think you are at the like forefront of this sea change. And so, yeah, I'm just wondering if you have any words on that as we kind of like bring this campfire women's chat toward.
Yeah, I mean, I think, most of what I was feeling while you both were talking is like how I never, and I don't think anybody ever teaches anybody anything. You know, it's like, it's just the right person in front of you reminding you. And we, I guess, designed it that way because we're relational and we want to see ourselves in a meat suit that looks nothing like the one we see in the mirror, you know? And yeah, just the receptivity, it was such an essential part of the alchemy of what we've all created together. And I do think, you know, like I agree, Lisa, that we're moving in some pretty magical realms because the savior outside, sinner outside, you know, dogma of most organized religions, while they may have much of the, you know, the light of these teachings unlock, they necessitate, you know, the dark. And so that polarity is an interesting place to play for a while. And then there is this opportunity to explore complementarity and like how seemingly irreconcilable differences actually cohere around a common goal. And so like, how are we doing that on the collective level? How are we doing that with our partners? How are we doing that in ourselves? Right? All of these points of warfare, like how do we bring them beyond like peace and instead into this creative opportunity that wouldn't exist otherwise. And so, yeah, we're absolutely in a very cool time. And more, I just feel like, you know, sitting back with my popcorn and watching it unfold rather than imagining that there's anything I have to do, you know, to make it happen, which of course is not the case. So reminding myself of that all the time.
Yeah, I think the last thing I want to pull out is something you said earlier, which is like when we're always trying to fix things we can't create, and like human beings are here to create and express, right? So yeah, it's like creation maybe comes from that you who came home, right? Whereas fixing is always in the against. So yeah, what do I have to say? If you are looking for that magic where you don't recognize yourself, but you're more yourself than you've ever been, I would wholeheartedly recommend working with Kelly. She has 3 books out there, and you can kind of like see the arc of Kelly's maturation a little bit in them as well. And I know right now, Kelly, you're doing one-on-ones, which has not been available for a really long time, like since you were a psychiatrist. So I feel like the multitudes of people who love you out there should be jealous of me, because I feel like working with you was like a one-on-one container towards like growth as well. But I cannot recommend that enough. And I mean, I feel like I could tell people the best places to find you, but do you want to tell people the best places to find you if they're looking for your medicine?
No, thank you for this beautiful words. And I guess just all at kellybroganmd.com, still wielding those initials, earned that shit. So still playing around with it, even though it's, you know, about 8 incarnations ago, it feels like, that I was a psychiatrist on Madison Avenue and in New York. So I think just that's the safest bet, because one never knows with all of these ancillary social platforms how I will be experienced.
Yes, fair. I think we'll also link to both your one-on-ones as well as VMR. And I know that Vital Mind Reset, there's like an availability to be coached through it now that there wasn't before, with some really amazing coaches, which when you're ready for that initiation, sometimes it's nice to have the shaman there with you. So we'll link to both of those places. And yeah, I just so much gratitude for your existence as a human, your heart, and the fact that together we are getting to work through this sister woundology until maybe there isn't such thing anymore, you know? So thank you so much for being on the pod. Elisa, is there baby still screaming, or can you unmute?
I can unmute. I am, I'm nursing. That's why I'm doing it.
Clandestine.
Thank you so much, Kelly. It's been an absolute pleasure and delight, and just, so grateful to be co-creating with you, as they say, but truly that healing of the sister wound and that preternatural ability that you have to like hold out that signal for incredible women to find each other. We've been reflecting on that lately. Like, so sending that out there to our listeners, like, you are not alone in this journey. Like, there are women who can get you, and you can get yourself more as we're all always working towards. So I think that's also been just such a gift of being in your field. Like, I think a lot of us have felt so like, I'm doing this earth dance so differently, and which we are, and we can do this together. So yeah, just thank you so much. We love you.
Yay. Thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Softpreneur podcast. If it resonated with your ethos and your soul, we would be so grateful to you if you leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast.
This helps us grow so much, and it also helps more visionary business owners find the show so they can make their dream life their real life. So many blessings and love.